Welcome to a Prevent Connect podcast, where we explore the prevention of violence against women. This is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault.
Hello, this is David Lee from Prevent Connect, and today I am really pleased to be talking with a team of people from Ohio who have put together the new paper, Riding Tandem on the Pathway to Prevention, Ohio's Experience in Collaboratively Preventing Intimate Partner Violence and Sexual Violence. So I am joined by the report author, Joe Simonson from the Ohio Domestic Violence Network. Hi, Joe. How are you?
Hi, David. I'm fine.
Great. And we also have many of your contributors who worked on this paper. So we have Deborah Seltzer, and she is with the Sexual Assault and Domestic Violence Prevention Program at the Ohio Department of Health. Hi, Deborah.
Hello.
Hi. And we also are joined by Katie Hanna from the Ohio Alliance to End Sexual Violence. Hi, Katie.
Hi, David.
Hi, great to have you. And we are also joined with Rebecca Klein, who is also with the Ohio Domestic Violence Network. How are you doing, Rebecca?
I'm great, David. How are you?
I am doing really wonderfully. It's great to be able to talk with you on a topic that to me is really important, and I think important to us and all the people in the Prevent Connect community, is looking at how do we look at collaborative work on being able to address preventing both sexual violence and domestic violence or intimate partner violence, depending on which term we do. So, Joe, why don't I start with you? Can you just describe this paper, Riding Tandem on the Pathway to Prevention, and what this paper is?
Sure. It's meant to offer some guidance to folks that work locally or at the state level and the different collaborative partners that they encounter as they do their prevention work. So as they're looking at conjoining the two issues of intimate partner violence and sexual violence, strategically planning around those issues, it offers some guidance around patience, being steadfast, kind of alerts for bumps in the road and guidance for even those who fund such initiatives.
Well, great. Well, thank you. So I'm curious why this project began, which eventually resulted in this report. So, Deborah, why don't you talk about why, from your perspective, this came about?
We had made the decision in Ohio to work on our state prevention plan jointly between intimate partner violence and sexual violence because we both had the direction from CDC to do that as a part of our shared work. And as we began talking with each other, we really realized how much we were learning from each other about what was the same and what was different between our two issues. And it helped to get that down on paper and be clear about what we were learning from that experience.
So, Katie, from the Sexual Assault Coalition, how did you approach this project and why did you think it was important?
Yeah, I think, you know, the project is critical in terms of collaboration across domestic violence and sexual assault because we can't do one without the other. You know, when we hear from local programs that they're going out and doing prevention in the schools, so often they may be focused on providing rape prevention education, but they're also hearing disclosures about domestic violence that's happening at home. And so it really takes the whole community response to say, we need to do this together because although we see unique barriers and issues with domestic violence and sexual assault, there's so much more that we can do together in talking about referrals and talking about having a larger scope to actually prevent both of these issues.
And Rebecca, from the Ohio Domestic Violence Network perspective, looking at domestic violence, how did you see the value of doing this work?
Well, I really want to echo what Katie was talking about, you know, working across communities and creating a continuum of services from intervention services to primary prevention services is so important, and the intersections there between domestic violence and sexual violence are so profound. When you look at risk and protective factors, they almost line up, and it just makes sense in terms of sharing resources to work across those silos because potentially we could have a bigger impact.
So we look at domestic violence and sexual violence, as you said, Rebecca, there's a lot of commonality in risk factors and protective factors. And while there is some specificity, particularly in the services, the intervention services, from a prevention perspective, and especially from a primary prevention perspective, I think we see the commonalities are very profound and you know, sort of goes to the a good solution solves multiple problems, and there's a way that we can be able to address that. So you use both the prevention lens, but you're talking about the integration with the continuum of all services.
And this is different. I think it's important to acknowledge that, but also to not lose track of the fact that there are some distinctions. So we just want to really be able to articulate that, yes, there's all these things that we share, but let's also be clear about what we want to not lose by working together.
Great. That's really helpful. So you've come up with this metaphor of riding tandem. So, Joe, why don't you describe why you use riding tandem? I, of course, immediately evoke the tandem bicycle that I see not too often, but do see actually more and more. So why do you use that metaphor?
Well, as the concept was being discussed and we were coming to terms with what we wanted the paper to be and what we wanted it to document, I believe Deborah Seltzer actually had used the word tandem somewhere in correspondence to the group. And at the same time, riding around my neighborhood was a family on, I think it was more than a tandem bicycle. It had multiple seats. And both of those things were just kind of knocking around in my brain as I was trying to come to grips with all of the various input I was getting from the co-authors. And that just seemed like the appropriate analogy.
So can you describe some of the elements of writing in tandem that apply to looking at the work of sexual violence and domestic violence prevention?
There's all of the sort of plotting the coursework. As we do this together, we've got lots of destinations and stops we want to make in prevention. But there is sort of an end goal that we shared across the two communities, being the intimate partner violence community and the sexual violence community. And for several of those players, particularly on the local level, they're dual focus. We recognized the need that we were sort of on different timetables but with the same destination, and that there was a need for a really high level of communication to coordinate all of this. And there were also stopping points where, you know, one group or particular, maybe in one of the communities or in just one area, somebody that's more public health focused or somebody that is maybe more school-based focused, really needs to take a stop and get their bearings again for whatever reason. It might be because of other things in the environment at play, in the funding environment, political will, or just energy, stamina, and regrouping. So all of those things sort of started playing into the analogy for me, and it was very easy when I started thinking about it to come up with several examples of those.
Let's look at some examples, and I think I'll start with you, Rebecca, to highlight some examples of some of the challenges that there are in being able to work with both domestic violence and sexual violence and prevention efforts and how you're able to overcome those. So do you have something that comes to mind, Rebecca?
Well, I sure do, and I think about the history of the work in domestic violence and sexual assault programs and some of those tense relationships that exist, that have historically existed and continue to exist in some local communities and in some states where there's not a lot of cross-collaboration necessarily. And the lesson that we learned was that it really takes some very deliberate and very concerted relationship-building efforts, and we just have to pay attention to those relationships. We're at the point, at least I'm at the point in Ohio, where it doesn't feel authentic for me to make a decision about anything related to our prevention plan or what we're doing without checking in with my partners at the state level, you know, and a pose an idea before it gets implemented or executed to them to, you know, because it's a respectful thing and it models healthy relationships. And so we're trying to model healthy relationships at the state level for our partners so that we can help others as an example to build those relationships.
Well, thank you, Rebecca. Katie, some thoughts of some examples of some of the challenges that local agencies face in trying to be able to address domestic violence and sexual violence prevention efforts?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think actually a lot about there's a activity that Rebecca leads when we talk about one of the prevention workshops that we work on together between the Ohio Domestic Violence Network and the Ohio Alliance Against Sexual Violence, and that's with local practitioners. And one of the questions that's raised is it ethical to provide primary prevention when you don't have intervention services? And that raises a lot of discussion around what do we need to do, what do we need to have in place when we're doing primary prevention to have that intervention and referral network. And so that was one of the critical conversations we talked about as a group and that a lot of our local rape crisis programs struggle with. So about two-thirds of Ohio's counties do not have rape crisis centers. And so what that means is that it's really important that we work together and that we have continued to advocate for a both-and approach of having services for survivors of domestic violence, services for survivors of sexual assault, and being able to do primary prevention across both of those disciplines. So I think one of the challenges for us and for local programs was saying, if we're going into another county providing services, but we may not have a rape crisis center to refer to, it presents an ethical issue of saying we need to address this piece as well as we continue to do more primary prevention, knowing that we will have more disclosures coming forward.
So as you've been engaging in this process of this discussion and this intentionality to this issue in Ohio, how have you been able to address that concern?
Mm-hmm. From a state level, what we've really done is advocate for additional resources. So from a policy level change, certainly with all the high-profile attention around Steubenville, it was also a conversation with people saying, you know, rape is happening in our state. This is a huge issue not just in Steubenville but all across Ohio. And so I think that increased awareness and attention helped us garner support for some first-time dedicated state funding for rape crisis centers, which will allow local programs to provide both prevention and intervention services. And I think what was really powerful about that work is that we did it in terms of, you know, advocacy at a state level together, not saying that any other services from domestic violence should be taken away. We need those services. We need more prevention services, but that we have to approach it from supporting our collective work together.
Mm-hmm. I would like to add something there, if I can, David. This is Jo Simonson again. That was really one of the starters for us on the tandem analogy, because we saw that, you know, it was due to that sort of power-to-weight ratio. We felt like we could be louder, stronger, and cover more territory by conjoining the issues. So where there was a dearth of services, and we certainly recognized a dearth of intervention services in our sexual violence landscape here in Ohio, it helps to have strong partners getting noisy so that it's not just self-proclaimed from the movement, but that others recognize, you know, the value of that leverage.
Well, thank you. I've been talking with the authors of the new paper, Writing Tandem on the Pathway to Prevention, Ohio's Experience in Collaboratively Preventing Intimate Partner Violence and Sexual Violence. And I've been speaking with Jo Simonson, who you just heard from the Ohio Domestic Violence Network, Deborah Seltzer from the Ohio Department of Health. She is with the Sexual Assault and Domestic Violence Prevention Program, Katie Hanna from the Ohio Alliance to End Sexual Violence, and Rebecca Klein, also from the Ohio Domestic Violence Network. I just want to end, I think, with, and I'll go to you, Deborah, and then ask if anyone else has a last comment, but as you've begun on this process, what have you seen as the positive outcomes that have come about in Ohio by engaging in this writing tandem together to prevent sexual and domestic violence?
There's two things I'm really excited about. One, from working together, is the community of practice that we've built and the extent to which we've gained from the shared trainings and tools that we've developed around things like evaluation and just how we get our work done and that we've all moved forward together. And I think, but specifically by having this paper, we now have something that we can refer back to as we move forward toward communicating our message to the audiences we want to be reaching in Ohio with our shared prevention message.
Yeah, this is Katie, and I would echo again what Deborah said. I mean, we've seen an increase in participation from local programs at our Sexual Intimate Partner Violence Prevention Consortium meetings. And I just think the support that we have in the network that we've grown across the state with local program input and the collective response is significant. It's huge. And I would encourage other local programs in other states, you know, to continue building those relationships with the, you know, their sister coalitions, with their Department of Health, because I think it only makes the work that we do stronger.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly was not easy. There may have been some efficiency, though, because we've kind of created a shared language and shared from both communities, all of our collaborative partners, and reflected on the local level as well. So when we're linking our work as anti-oppression work, we've been able to build capacity in the state, both locally and across our departments, around those ideas. So that was certainly worth noting. Just simple things like, you know, shared space, shared printing, that really trying to alleviate some of the burden that this state-guided work creates on our most important partners, which are the local practitioners, was really helpful because they weren't answering the same types of questions on the same types of surveys and getting it confused, you know, several times. There was still a lot of work for them to do, but at least it was more direct, more intentional, and really saved them, I think, some headaches, and I think they were appreciative of that. Again, developing the tools, document, aligning around the state plan, and really just kind of empowering our organizations to take up more space on the horizon so that funders are looking and seeing us more clearly. State government systems, public systems are understanding the relationship across the issues better.
Well, great. Well, thank you all for speaking. Great hearing about the report. I encourage people to go ahead and check out this report, which is on the, I believe, probably on all of your organization's websites and also on Prevent Connect's website. And thank you all for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks, David. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to this Prevent Connect podcast. Prevent Connect is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The views presented on Prevent Connect are not necessarily the views of the United States government, the CDC, or CalCASA. To learn more about Prevent Connect, visit www.preventconnect.org. For more information about CalCASA's mission or to show your support, visit calcasa.org. That's CALCASA.org.